This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings this week. We've got a cup final to preview, plenty of Premier League action to get through, and dissecting what was a really troublesome game week for English sides in the Champions League. Sadly, though, we've got to start off on some news none of us wanted to hear. That's the fact that legendary commentator John Motson has died at the age of 77. The news broke just before we started recording today's podcast. Mark, we've got to talk about Motty, a legend in the game, and plenty of us' kind of footballing journey has been narrated by him. You've got fond memories of him.
Yeah, I mean, him and Barry Davis and Brian Moore, that was sort of the trio, weren't it, really, depending if it was BBC or ITV. In terms of just sort of John Motson, the person, met him on a number of occasions. He absolutely loved the Racing Post and used to always get in touch with the then editor, Bruce Millington, demanding to know when the sort of all the pullouts are out. He's done forwards for us on various products. He was seen sort of fairly regularly on race courses, loved horse racing. I did a gig with him once where we had to preview a World Cup in after racing at Sandown, I think it was. It was the World Cup that Spain eventually won. Yeah, so we did like a preview show of that. And yeah, of course, absolutely, sad news. And I think, a lot of people would have had Motson down as their favourite commentator. And, him and Barry Davis used to... It was a bit like when in England sort of times when they had two great goalkeepers in Shilton and Clement, and it was always a battle to see who would be the number one. It was pretty much the same, wasn't it, on the BBC. Some people preferred Motty, some people Barry Davis, but they were just both great commentators.
Remarkable, the fact that he covered 10 World Cups, 10 European Championships and 29 FA Cup finals for BBC Sport. I think that the reason everyone loves Motty, Mark, is the fact, he's different generations have been able to listen to him. And that's quite rare nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. And our very own James Milton on the Racing Post paid his own tribute recently. He had a sheepskin coat on at the work Christmas party. And, it's John Motson.
Did he wear it as a bet? Or
No, it was, he claims it was trendy. But, it's iconic, isn't it? That him in the sheepskin, loving his stats. He will have inspired a generation of commentators behind him. And you're right. I mean, the world would have changed and sort of how people view their football would have dramatically changed from when he started to when he finished. And he was still able to hold his own and go through the generations, and that is the mark of somebody that really knows what they're doing and can be at the top of their game.
Absolutely. Well, he certainly left his impact on the game, and from everyone at the Racing Post, our thoughts with John Motson's family. Let's get on to our, looking back on what's been a busy week already and plenty more to come. We'll start in the Champions League, Mark, where it's been a problematic few days for English sides.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even back to last week, obviously Tottenham and Chelsea both lost, didn't they, away from home. And we'll get on to Liverpool, I'm sure, in a moment with that humbling defeat at the hands of Real Madrid. And then Manchester City, favourites for the competition, still the favourites for the competition, away from home, were unable to get the job done despite being odds on, could only draw 1-1 against Leipzig. I think Pep Guardiola was right in some respects that, you can't just expect to go to Germany and just beat these teams, but it maybe just kind of continues this feeling, really, that City are not all conquering like they were, or certainly felt like they were in recent campaigns. And I think sort of some of the stats that I sort of just wanted to pull out from that game against Leipzig last night: only 12 shots in the whole game for Manchester City, which is not them at their best, and only three on target. So, yeah, just not, I suppose, not clicking really in various areas of the pitch. I think in isolation, a draw away from home against Leipzig really isn't that bad a result. You would expect them to qualify. I don't think there's any, you know, great kind of roots and branch investigation to what's gone wrong with English football and the Premier League at the moment. You know, it's still only half time in all of these games, and you know, we could be speaking in a couple of weeks' time and three of them are in the quarterfinals. So I don't want to make it too dramatic at the moment, but not great. But City's result certainly better than the one that was served up by Liverpool 24 hours before.
Yeah, you mentioned Liverpool there, Mark. I mean, I was at Carrow Road for the big game on Tuesday night, and I checked and saw Liverpool 2 up, thinking, oh, hello, going well against Madrid. And then it all unravelled. I mean, Liverpool, you just can't trust them at the moment.
No, I mean, I think it, you know, would have been a chastening experience the second half, particularly. They were just not able, that midfield just wasn't able to get near Real Madrid, and you know, the light kind of went out. They started fast, got themselves into a great position. Real Madrid, the sort of powers of recovery, kind of the anti-PSG, aren't they? Where you know, PSG kind of have like bad 5 minutes, you know, Real Madrid, and can't react to it. Real Madrid so calm under pressure. It did remind me though of when Bayern Munich, do you remember when they absolutely smashed Tottenham? And I think we spoke about it on the pod. And then the next day I said I didn't even watch the ending. I turned over to how they make KFC chicken or something. I can't remember. But and that was like the end of the year. It was like an end of an era, wasn't it, for the Pochettino team? It had that kind of vibe about it, where Klopp was probably, you know, gone home that night and just thought, I need a new team. I've got to do this all again. And whether he's got kind of the heart and the patience to do that and go again, I don't know. It feels like such a difficult and big job that he's got on his hands now. And obviously, you know, Vinicius scored a great goal. There was then the Alisson mistake that can happen, and if you ask the goalkeepers to play out, it does leave you vulnerable on occasion. But it was more the way they were just unable to press in that second half, and when Liverpool were at their best, they were able to, what they did in the first 10 minutes, they were able to sustain, and they just can't do that anymore. And they were well off Madrid in the second half. I'm not saying they deserved to lose 5-2, but I mean, like, once Ancelotti just moved Valverde over to the side where Salah was and sort of stopped the Liverpool threat down the Salah and Trent, Alexander-Arnold, there just didn't appear to be sort of anything going on for Liverpool. And at Anfield, you just don't expect that in a European game. So a really, obviously, a disappointing result. If you lose 5-2, it's going to be disappointing. But I think the performance from the last hour just really shows the problems ahead, I think, for Liverpool, just in terms of, you know, where they go, not this season, but, you know, next season and beyond that.
Impressive from Madrid, though, Mark. You've put them up a lot of times on the podcast this season in terms of their games in La Liga. But I think a lot of teams, if they'd gone 2-0 down and kind of the manner in which they'd gone down at Anfield, they might have got flustered and it would have turned to damage limitation, but not so for Madrid.
No, they're very calm in those situations. And at some stage, you have to think it's not luck when it keeps happening over and over again over... You know, it feels like about a decade where they'll be outplayed for large spells of matches and still win. It can't be luck, can it? I think they started poorly, and actually the injury to Alaba maybe helped them, because Nacho came on and did a really solid job at left-back. Alaba, of course, likes to go forward from that position, and maybe they were able to get some stability. But Camavinga sort of grew into the game. Modric got better as it went on, which sort of defies logic when you're sort of, you know, seeing somebody at the twilight of their career. And in Vinicius Junior, you could argue, other people might say Mbappe, but I think you could argue he's like the most devastating player in the world at the moment. And I like the way that Carlo Ancelotti described him as the most decisive player, because he obviously didn't want to say best, because he's got the Ballon d'Or winner in Karim Benzema up front. But he called him the most decisive player at the moment. And he is, really getting these sort of numbers up now to where the true elite do, in terms of goals, assists and, goal contributions. And it was quite a good night, because I did put him up in the race and post the start of the tournament to win the Golden Boot. So, with Mbappe struggling to make it through, Liverpool probably on the way out, Real Madrid going through, Vinicius getting a couple of goals was a really good way, particularly with Erling Haaland not scoring as well. So, yeah, a good couple of days really for the Golden Boot selection.
Great couple of days for the Golden Boot, and also a good couple of days in terms of one of your more recent outright tips in Napoli. They got past Eintracht Frankfurt 2-0 and just continue what's been a remarkable season for them.
They are just a really brilliant, fun team to watch. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt, I don't think, are particularly great for a Champions League last 16 team. There'll be tougher tests to come, but you can only sort of beat what's in front of you. I think it's difficult, away from home, in that environment, to play as well as they did. They hit the woodwork. They missed a penalty. They still scored two goals. Mwani got himself sent off, so he's out of the return game. It should be a very comfortable passage through to the last eight. And I mean, part of me, obviously, I've tipped them to win it, so part of me wants them to get the easiest draw possible in the quarterfinals. There is sort of the football fan in me would love to see them sort of take on a Man City and just see how. Good they are, because I don't think we really know and have reached the limit of what this team is capable of yet.
We mentioned how it was a poor kind of couple of weeks for English sides in the Champions League, not so for Italian teams, because Inter with a 1-0 win over Porto, brilliant for Italian sides.
Yeah, again, though, you don't want to get too excited, because both of those Milan teams might end up going out. It's slender advantage. I mean, the most amazing thing was that Romelu Lukaku scored. It was easy to forget that he's at Inter, isn't it? But a decisive goal for him. Yeah, I mean, 1-0. It's advantage Inter, but obviously with no away goal rule in operation now, it's probably not that bad a result for the away team. And what was that? Was that 3-1-0 home wins, I think, yeah. Over the sort of that Champions League bit. There was a 1-0 away win as well. So, a lot of tight games where if it gets to 1-0, it feels like a par score almost, I think.
Absolutely. We've got a cup final to preview. Let's do that now. Yeah, we've got an EFL Cup final to look forward to this Sunday. It's Manchester United against Newcastle. The 90-minute market sees Manchester United 5-4, Newcastle 5-2, 5-2. The draw to lift the trophy. Manchester United favourites at 4-6, Newcastle 5-4. Mark, this is going to be a fascinating one after recent developments, because Nick Pope got sent off, didn't he, against Liverpool for just a moment of madness. Dubravka's cup tied, which means it's going to be Karius in the sticks for Newcastle. I mean, probably not what they'd hoped for going into their biggest game in a very long while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, Dubravka crazily can't play because he played for Manchester United earlier on in the competition, and will actually get a winner's medal if Manchester United win, which adds to it. And even the fact that, like, Darlow, who would have been the third choice goalkeeper, he was allowed to leave on loan for Hull. So I think we really are now talking about full fifth choice with Karius or Mark Gillespie. It's not ideal, is it? Pope has been absolutely fantastic for Newcastle this season. what can you say about it? I mean, yeah, we just don't know if Carriers is, well, I was going to say we don't know if Carriers is any good. I think we know he's not that good because he's obviously had, a lot of troubles at Liverpool. The Champions League final, look, there's been a lot of talk that maybe he was concussed in that game and that played its part. And, you know, that would be a really sad moment if that was true, you know, to play in a game like that when you suffered concussion. You had that incident, didn't he, with Sergio Ramos. But fact of the matter is that even before that final, he was making way too many mistakes. You saw how much better Liverpool were when they got a proper, you know, goalkeeper in there. I'm assuming it'll be Karius. I mean, there is the potential it's Mark Gillespie. You know, you play for Motherwell and Walsall, but whoever it is, the drop-off from Pope to Karius or Gillespie is pretty significant. And like, you know, the fact that Newcastle have got them down as, you know, probably their fourth and fifth choice goalkeepers, if you were to write down all the goalkeepers that have been registered at the club this season, I mean, that is not what you want in terms of going into, you know, a final that is sort of almost being, you know, it's only the EFL final, and there's even suggestions that maybe the competition won't exist in a couple of years, and, you know, it's the least important of all the trophies on offer this season. But it's obviously a huge deal to Newcastle, and I think it means a lot to Manchester United as well, because they're in, by their standards, a significant trophy drought, not as long obviously as Newcastle, but it's going to be a great occasion. And I just think with these sort of occasions, you want everybody to be there. And I just hope that there'll be some that will be, you know, hoping that Karius has an absolute nightmare and they can laugh at him and make all kinds of memes. I just hope that, you know, it doesn't cost Newcastle. I think it will, but I hope that it's not like an absolute blunder, you know, that he drops one in or something like that, because that's just not nice on a human level. But I think from a betting point of view, I mean, I think it's hard to know how sort of significant it is. Obviously, the market has moved towards Manchester United. I think goalkeeper in such a unique position that I'm not sure that we even know how far to move it. And I suspect that it's not gone far enough, actually, because the difference in ability between Pope and that kind of confidence he will give out to the rest of that defence that has played so well this season compared to what's coming in, it's just vast, I think.
The difficulty for Manchester United coming into this game, Mark, is the fact they've got a huge game on Thursday night against Barcelona. And it's not the fact that they'd, you know, just won the first leg 3-0 or something. This is still very much in the balance. It was 2-2 in the first leg. So not ideal prep for United. I guess the positive for them is the fact it is at home, so they don't have too much travel. But that is probably not what Erik ten Hag would have wanted.
No, not in terms of preparation for the final. Obviously, he wants to keep going in all the competitions. And so, you know, you playing Barcelona means you're doing well, doesn't it? In terms of the Europa League, it's not ideal. It would be even worse if they go extra time, maybe penalties. You know, there's the potential for that, isn't there? You know, I mentioned the away goal rule not being in operation. One of the things that does bring into play is more draws in terms of the two-legged tie. So it's not, I remember, was it Harry Redknapp once said, you know, he was moaning about playing a Europa League game. I think it was like Fiorentina, something like that. And he was saying, you know, we should be going out and getting measured for our suits, and we've got a Europa League game to be playing. And it's not perfect. I mean, I do wonder if there's a better date for it in the calendar than, you know, on the weekend after a European round of matches, because it's highly likely that one of those teams will be involved. But, you know, that's what United have got a big squad for. And, Ten Hag will have to manage them. I think he has been managing them anyway, wasn't he? The team against Leicester wasn't what you would call absolute first choice. So I think he had this week in mind when he picked that team. We're speaking before the Barcelona game, so it's hard to know exactly how much it's taken out of the legs. I mean, imagine they beat Barcelona. What a boost that would be going into the finals. It doesn't have to be a negative, but I would say it's not ideal. I'd say it's more ideal than having to pick your fourth or fifth choice goalkeeper.
Absolutely. As you say, we are speaking about this game before the Barcelona game. So opinions not fully formed as of yet. But at the moment, Mark, what's your bet for this one?
Manchester United to win in 90 minutes. I mean, I think in terms of like to lift the trophy, obviously David De Gea isn't the best at saving penalties. Again, I'm saying that before the Barcelona game, maybe they end up winning the shootout, but notoriously not the best in shootout. So I think, yeah, if Newcastle can take it beyond 90 minutes, then maybe that they'll really start to believe. But I think 5-4 Manchester United, it would be the way I would play it. I mean, I've spoken a lot about Newcastle's problems in terms of the goalkeeper. They've only scored 13 goals in 13 games since the World Cup. And, you know, so it's in both boxes, actually, where maybe things aren't going perfect for them at the moment. United going strong and, you know, Rashford is in, I was going to say, the form of his life. I mean, there aren't many better than him in Europe at the moment, are there? So somebody like that up front, you just wonder, like, where Newcastle's goals are coming from. I did think, though, if you do fancy Newcastle to win the game, I was just looking at Guimaraes at 14-1, around that, to be man of the match. You know, he's the type of player that could sort of dictate it for Newcastle if they are to go on and win, but I don't think they will.
Excited for that one, excited for the Premier League as well. Let's preview that now. We've got Friday night football this week, 8 o'clock, Fulham against Wolves. Talk me through this one, Mark.
Yeah, an intriguing game. You know, obviously Fulham fighting for Europe, which is mad, considering I think most people would have thought they would have been involved in some kind of relegation battle, even if they eventually avoided it. But nothing of the sort. Wolves had that big blow last week, obviously, against Bournemouth. I think if you look at the stats, they should have got something out of the game, but that's the way it goes. I thought the draw was the way to go in this one because, you know, for all that Fulham are doing well, if you look at some of their home results, they did, you know, they did fail to beat Everton and Bournemouth at Craven Cottage, and they were on the stats absolutely battered at Brighton last week. I mean, Leno, I was speaking to a Fulham fan, he said Leno played very well in that game. I expect Wolves to make it tough for Fulham, and they might not be able to break them down. It becomes different now because I think Fulham getting, you know, will be getting much more respect, where a team like Wolves, maybe, I don't know, at the start of the season would have been thinking they could go to Craven Cottage and win. Now they're probably going there thinking, let's not lose. And that will provide, I think, a different sort of set of questions that Fulham need to answer. So I'm going to go for a draw. I think it might be a low scoring game.
Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to Saturday, 3 o'clock action. We'll start with Everton against Villa. And comparing things to a couple of weeks ago, Mark, things have improved ever so slightly at Everton.
Oh, I'd say more than ever so slightly. I mean, they lost that game against Liverpool. They always lose against Liverpool, nearly always lose against Liverpool at Anfield. They've won the other two games in sort of classic Dyche fashion, haven't they? You know, just been really solid defensively, not giving up very many opportunities. Sounds like they're about to receive a boost. I was just reading Jordan Pickford's about to sign a new contract. So I think most assumed he would maybe leave in the summer. I mean, he's a rash goalkeeper, but he's also England's goalkeeper, so he's not completely useless and has done very well for large parts of this season. I'm going to go for Everton draw, no bet. I just think, you know, we had them two really solid 1-0 wins against Arsenal and Leeds at Goodison Park. And I just don't see anything different coming against Aston Villa. Villa have had a tough run of fixtures. Leicester, who are improving, they played Man City and Arsenal. Even before that, I didn't think they looked great. If you go back to the, obviously lost in the cup to Stevenage, that Leeds game that was a Friday night on TV, not sure they deserve to win that one. So, I think Everton, sort of a team here that, you know, just know what they're doing. So I'm going to go for Everton draw, no bet.
Okay. If you believe in six pointers, this next game is certainly one. It's Leeds against Southampton. And managerial talk to discuss here, Mark. Leeds do have a new manager and comes in the form of Javi Garcia.
Javi Gracia
Jack, it is Gratil, isn't it?
Every other Racing Post journalist and all the subs that work on the copy go, oh no, what's Javi Gracia doing here? Because it's so natural, isn't it, to go for Javi Gracia. So Javi Gracia...
I'll call him Javi from now on.
Yeah, I suppose in terms of Premier League viewers, we'll remember him from his time at Watford when he took them to the cup final and a mid-table finish. If you remember his La Liga time, I think he did very well in difficult circumstances at Malaga, not so well in difficult circumstances at Valencia. I suppose, you know, they brought him in as a firefighter. What I would say is that Leeds needed to make a managerial appointment. I mean, it was like ridiculous the way it had gone. You know, what's the fifth choice in the end? I think he's better than Jesse Marsh, and I think he'll get them organised in terms of the actual process that Leeds went through to appoint him. I think long term that sort of highlights some issues around the club. You know, that's not a way to run a football club the way that Leeds have done it in terms of how they've ended up with Javi Gracia. I do think he'll tighten them up defensively. I can't back them around evens to win this game. There's just too many unknown, not only from the Leeds point of view. Obviously, Southampton have got Celes in charge at the moment. It looks like they're going to give him a go to see whether he's good enough. Obviously, he got to a flying start with that remarkable win at Chelsea last week. I'm going to go for under 2.5 goals because Leeds have failed to score in 4 of their last 5 in the Premier League. And Gracia, you know, from what I remember of him at Watford, he had them organised. And I mean, we might start to see a change in Leeds style, and it might be needed, I suppose, if they're to stay up.
Yeah, well worth keeping your eye on that one. It's going to be an intriguing affair. Let's take a look at Leicester against Arsenal then, Mark. Where are we at with Leicester at the moment? Because a couple of really good results in the Premier League, scoring 4 goals in back-to-back games, and then a 3-0 defeat to United. Would it be fair to say that scoreline maybe didn't quite reflect the performance?
Oh, it didn't reflect the first half at all. I mean, how Leicester went in, you know, and found themselves, you know, behind was ridiculous, really. They'd been, I thought Leicester for the first half an hour were really good. I mean, they absolutely pinned United back. De Gea made 2 great saves. Now, I think if you can lose 3-0 and come out with positives, it felt like Leicester maybe could have done. Obviously, do need to defend better. But I thought there were positives. It felt more like the Leicester that we sort of come to expect of the last few seasons. And I think they'll be able to give Arsenal a game. I mean, what a week they had last week. You know, that City defeat and, you know, when they're 2-1 down against Aston Villa, here we go again. And then to get the win and the way that they got the win, and then Man City to not beat Nottingham Forest.
It could have ended differently, couldn't it? Haaland touched it away against Forest.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, it wouldn't have been that unusual to have thought that, you know, they could have lost that game 2-1 or drawn it 2-2. You know, Man City get that second or third goal like they should have done probably at Forest. And, you're looking at a completely different title race. I mean, this is going to be a really fun game. It's a big shame it's not on TV or certainly in terms of the UK viewers not being able to watch it. I'm going to go for over 2.5 goals. I feel like I've done a lot of goals tips so far. I certainly have gotten more to come maybe, but over 2.5 goals, because in terms of Leicester, them last 3 games, they've had 14 goals, and I don't think it was a fluke that the way that they're playing wide open but look to attack, and you know, Arsenal enjoy those spaces. But they're not defending perfectly at the moment either. So, I think this is going to be really fun. I wouldn't back Arsenal because I think Leicester are dangerous.
Yeah, really excited for that one. Lots of brilliant games in the Premier League this weekend. And another big one in West Ham against Nottingham Forest, Mark. West Ham still find themselves in the bottom 3. They need a win here, don't they?
They do. I'm not sure they'll get it. Or I certainly wouldn't back them to get it. I thought they were absolutely dismal in that game at White Hart Lane on Sunday. The team selection was very defensive from David Moyes. Too defensive. Declan Rice referenced it after the game, didn't he? The 5-3-2. Not getting enough support up to the the two. And, you know, I think that in terms of, I think I've seen every Tottenham home game this season. And in terms of Premier League, West Ham have been the worst team.
Really?
This season. It was, I thought, a dreadful performance from them. One that was sort of, you know, them almost assuming that they're too good to go down. And I feel like they are and should be. But, you know, with that kind of attitude, you're going to have problems. I think if Nottingham Forest can sort of go to the London Stadium and sort of frustrate them for 20 minutes, not going to take much for the crowd to turn. Then home advantage doesn't become, you know, a great deal. The only reason I'm not going for a Forest sort of win, they've only scored 3 away goals in the Premier League. So, you know, they need to do much more away from home. But I expect Steve Cooper to set them up defensively, try to frustrate the life out of West Ham. And, you know, whether West Ham have got the tools to unlock that Forest defence, I'm not so sure.
Not happy listening for West Ham fans. We've got an evening, or a couple of evening games on Saturday. We'll start with the 5:30 game, Bournemouth against Manchester City. Now, it feels like, Mark, we should just say, well, this will be a routine win for City, try and find a bit of value in some form of market and move on. But you can't say that now, can you?
Actually, I was just about to say exactly that. I know what you're getting at. You know, their away form has not been good now for a while. If you actually look at the, or I'll say good, you know, by City standards, but if you actually look at that game against Forest, I mean, 73% possession, 6-1 shots on target. It was 11-2 shots off target, 10-0 on corners. I mean, if you showed me those statistics and said what was the final score, it would have been a while before I got to 1-1 in that game. You know, it was one of those days. You know, Haaland missed some chances. Foden could have passed the ball to him when that situation, and he decided to take the shot on himself. I think that this will be routine because, you know, Bournemouth, I mentioned that night that Bournemouth, I think, were on the verge of getting a result somewhere, but I'm not sure they absolutely deserve that 1-0 against Wolves. And I do think this will be routine. You're finding ways to back Man City in this game, and I'm struggling. I've just 3-0 just felt like the, I suppose, most likely outcome.
Crystal Palace against Liverpool will be the next game we preview. I'm not even going to say what I think about this one, Mark, because I'm sure you'll have the opposite opinion. What's your tip for it?
Do you know what? I'm going to go for Liverpool. And I surprised myself with that, but I do think there'll be a reaction to what happened against Real Madrid. And if there isn't, then you know I think that maybe even spells bigger problems for Jurgen Klopp. But let's try to focus on the positives. Really, Liverpool had beaten Everton. They had beaten Newcastle. They were 2-0 up against Real Madrid. In terms of expected goals, the 5-2 was, you know, a real fluke in that regard. Real Madrid have got Vinicius Junior, they've got Karim Benzema, they've got Valverde, they've got Modric, they've got Camavinga, Rodrigo, etc. Crystal Palace haven't got that. And so I don't think it's going to, you know, I don't see where the Palace threat comes from. And I mean, if you look at that Liverpool bench when, you know, Joel Matic could come in, they could bring in Firmino if they wanted to. RV Elliott has played a fair bit this season. Jota is now sort of back, got another 24 minutes in his legs. You know, I think there was enough there in the sort of first 30 minutes to say that Liverpool could at least react and beat Crystal Palace. Now, you know, I've already said at the top of the show, I think that Liverpool got big issues sort of, you know, over a longer period. But I think that Crystal Palace, I'm not quite sure what they're doing well this season. And therefore, I think that there's a good opportunity for Liverpool to get the win.
That's the most damning comment I think you've ever provided, Mark.
What do they do well, Jack? I don't know.
I can't answer you on that. But, oh, dear, that's made me giggle.
I tell you what they do well. They don't lose as many games as they probably should. So maybe there's that.
They'll take that, a backhanded compliment. Sunday, 1:30, I'm sure this is a game you're excited about, Mark. Spurs against Chelsea, good opportunity for your boys.
It is. I don't think Tottenham are as good as fourth place suggests at the moment in the Premier League. I had to sort of do a double take when I saw they sort of jumped up to fourth after that win against West Ham. It doesn't feel like that type of season. It's difficult to fancy Chelsea, isn't it? Because they've only won two of their last 14 games. I have seen signs of Chelsea getting better. They just don't put it in sort of, you know, over a period of 90 minutes. I was going to go for the draw in this game. I think it's really difficult. Tottenham, inconsistent team, but so are Chelsea. And they're having bad moments in matches at the moment, but they're not a bad team. You reel off the players that they've got in that side. You know, it should be strong defensively. It should have quality midfield. It's got the same up front as well. So I feel like they are going to win at a decent price somewhere. It's just difficult to sort of trust them to do it with two wins in 14 and pressure growing on Graham Potter. So I'll go for honours even at Spurs.
I was going to mention Graham Potter, Mark, because we do discuss him every week, but with every week that passes, the intensity around him kind of increases. Do you think he's... I know that the owners have come out and backed him, but realistically, I think once fans are lost, it's incredibly difficult to win them back over. What do you think the future holds for Mr. Potter?
I think he'll get the season. Is that playing it too safe, or...
No, I don't. I guess the question would be, do you think they'll improve if he's given the season?
Yes, I do. Because, I mean, you know, just organically, if you're Chelsea, you're probably, you know, if you've only had two wins in 14, it's just unlikely to sustain that. They've been in a lot of games. I felt they should have beat Borussia Dortmund. I felt like they should have had the penalty at West Ham. And, you know, when Suchet tipped it around the post, then maybe that ends up in a win. There's been a number of them home games, again, where unexpected goals, they've sort of, should have won, in inverted commas. Things are not going great for them at the moment, quite obviously. But I don't see them as being this sort of terrible team. And I think, look, when they're like, you know, 2-5 in home games, then you can say, let's oppose them. Here, they're sort of the outsiders at Tottenham. That might suit them in some ways. Not as much pressure on. And I do think that João Félix is somebody that can make a big difference for them over the season.
Okay, that's the Premier League card marked for you. Let's talk all things EFL with Dan Childs. Things are certainly heating up in the EFL, and we've got top tips to Dan Childs with us to talk us through this weekend. Dan, how's things?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Jack.
Good man. Four tips for our audience this week. We'll start in the Championship.
Yeah, I'm going to start off with a game between two teams battling for promotion, Sheffield United at home to Watford. Sheffield United in second place, Watford in seventh, just outside the playoffs. I actually fancy Watford to go and get a result here of some sort, either a draw or 3 points. Sheffield United are a shade of odds on, which I think is too short at the moment. Like, they're starting to look vulnerable for me, Sheffield United, in that race for second place. Looked a couple of weeks ago that them and Burnley were both going to be home in the hose, but all of a sudden, two defeats. They lost 3-1 at home to Middlesbrough, who are the main team that are chasing them, and then went and lost 3-2 at Millwall. Not just any team can lose a couple of games, but the manner of those defeats for me would be concerning. The fact they've conceded 6 goals across the two games. Watched the two games as well. There's a lot of other chances in those games for Middlesbrough and for Millwall to score more goals. Middlesbrough caused them problems on the counter-attack with their pace and movement. Millwall, just from really, you know, pressure and balls into the box. So they're not defending particularly well. I think they maybe could have done with freshening things up in January. The takeover didn't go through. They couldn't do any January business. And other teams have strengthened. And, you know, I'm starting to think that second place could be up for grabs. And maybe even Watford. They're going there. They're 11 points off at the moment, but starting to pick up form. Maybe even they might be thinking, you know, we can have a crack at this. They have been getting improving a lot with their big players coming back, the likes of Joao Pedro, Ken Semmer, Keenan Davis coming back to fitness. You look at their last two games, Watford. They went to Burnley, drew 1-1. I mean, they were just, you know, about a minute away from winning that game away to Burnley. Then they've gone and followed up with a 3-2 win at home to West Brom, who have been going really well recently. So Watford are getting it together. Sheffield United, as I say, are looking a bit vulnerable. So for me, prices are a little bit wrong. I would take Watford to get at least a draw.
Yeah, the championship race for the playoffs and indeed the top two, according to Dan Charles. Very exciting as always. Can't wait for that game. Let's dip into League One then, Dan, and a couple of tips here.
Yeah, another match that involves two teams fighting for promotion. Peterborough in ninth place at home to Plymouth in second place. This time I'm going to go for the team in second place, Plymouth. Plymouth's price, I mean, they're 11-4 to win the game here away to Peterborough, and 17-10 you can get on the draw, no bet. Now, this to me just looks way too big. There seems to be a built-in expectation in the markets for throughout a lot of the season that Plymouth are gonna somehow fall away or fade. I mean, we're a long way, you know, nearly three quarters of the way into the season now. They've got an 8-point gap to Ipswich. Okay, they drew 0-0 at home to Fleetwood last Saturday, but they dominated the game. Fleetwood can be quite stubborn opponents anyway, especially away from home. They've still taken 7 points from the last three games. There's no real sign of a drop-off there. They've had the boost this week of getting to the EFL Trophy final. They won a penalty shootout at home to Cheltenham in the semi-final. And I think they can go to Peterborough and win this game. Peterborough, Darren Ferguson's gone in. They still look kind of, you know, win one, lose one, if you like. They won last weekend, Peterborough. They lost the previous two games. They're an up and down side. Won 15 league games, lost 13. I just don't see how they can be, you know, just really around even money to win this game at home to the team that's second in the league, been excellent all season. For me, Plymouth are the value. Take them on the draw, no bet.
Okay, it feels as if people have been writing off Plymouth all season, haven't they? But no reason to on recent form. What about the second one in League One, Dan?
Yeah, second one in League One. Cambridge, second from bottom, going away to Exeter, just sort of around a mid-table area. I actually think Cambridge are going to go to Exeter and get something here, get at least a draw. Cambridge, the last couple of games, they're just showing a few positive signs despite their position in the table. They won 1-0 at home to Oxford last Saturday. Then they've gone to Fleetwood on Tuesday. They lost 1-0, but they've conceded with Fleetwood's only shot on target. So they've played pretty well, Cambridge, in that game. They are starting to look more solid at the back, which shouldn't be a surprise, really, because in January they've signed Ryan Bennett and Michael Morrison, two defenders who have spent most of their career playing in the Championship. And those signings have tightened them up at the back, which is going to help you, you know, when you're trying to fight against the drop there. And they're going to Exeter at a good time. Exeter have only scored one goal and got 1 point from the last four games. Now, one of the big reasons for that is Giovanni Brown has been suspended by the club for that period. He's up on an assault charge at the moment. And Giovanni Brown's impact on Exeter this season is massive. 12 goals, 9 assists. I mean, that's exactly half the goal involvements of 21, is half of their 42 league goals for Exeter. So no surprise that they're suddenly struggling to score goals. And given Cambridge's defensive improvement, as I've mentioned, I think Cambridge could go there and get at least a point.
Okay, good stuff. Let's get your fourth and final, and we'll go into League Two.
Yeah, League Two. We're going to go with second place Stevenage to win at home to 15th place Tranmere. Just a shade of odds on Stevenage, which I think is a really good price for them. They've had a little wobble, four games without a win, but I don't think it's anything to get too alarmed about. Last week's 2-0 loss at Stockport. I mean, Stockport are going on a real great run at the moment, five wins in a row. So I don't think it was quite a tight match as well. Not a disastrous defeat that for Stevenage. At home, they're really strong. They've won 12 of 15 home league games, and I think this is a great chance for them to get back on track. Every visiting team at Stevenage this season, you know you're going to be tested with direct play and balls into the box, Evans' preferred style. And I don't think Tranmere are going to be up to the challenge. They've lost four of the last five matches. They've been missing the last game when they lost 2-0 at home to Mansfield last weekend. They were without three key players, Kieran Morris, Jordan Turnbull and Kane Hemmings, who are three regulars in a team that Mickey Mellon, he likes to play the same 11 most weeks. So for them to be without three key players is a big deal for them. They were poor at home to Mansfield, and I can't see it being much better this weekend. Stevenage to win.
Okay, great stuff. Dan, thank you very much as always.
You're welcome, Jack.
Big thanks to Dan for his insight on the EFL. As always, you can read more of his work on the Racing Post Sport website. Let's move on to Mark's best bets for this week. We'll start with a player prop shop, and I'm hoping you're going to put up some kind of shot on target bet, Mark, because they always seem to come in.
No, the bookmakers are running scared. They're absolutely running scared. Some of the prices I've seen this morning on the shots, really disappointing. You know, let's put a call out to them. Come on, let's be a bit more aggressive. I think because obviously the popularity of the market and the fact that you can't back the other side, we're just getting skinnier and skinnier odds. And I think you can only play when the prices are right. So I don't think the prices are right for this week. Where I do think the price is right is the Egyptian King, Mo Salah, 5-1. I think each way that feels to me like a nice price. Recent performances, I've been putting the boot into Salah as much as anyone, but I think recent performances been much more like it from Salah. Obviously got the opener against Everton, scored against Real Madrid. And he played well against Real Madrid. First half, Alaba couldn't handle him, and he maybe would have had, could have had more than one goal. So, I think a nice opportunity for Salah to get himself a goal. Hasn't scored away from home since Boxing Day. Hopefully those away day blues can be a thing of the past for Salah and also for Liverpool. But I do fancy Liverpool to win, bounce back. And if you are going to get a reaction, I think it'll be early. So situational, thinking they're going to come out and have a right go at Palace in early stages. And, hopefully Salah can get that first goal.
Let's hope so. Let's move on to a long shot for this week.
Yeah, so this is in actually that London derby we were discussing earlier between Tottenham and Chelsea. I'm going to go for Thiago Silva and Banashil. They're 20-1 and 22-1 anytime. So small stakes, just split them equally on those two to score. And I'm just going to reel off the goal scorers from the last five games for Chelsea against Tottenham, and see if you can spot a pattern. Koulibaly, Thiago Silva, Rudiger. There was Havertz and an own goal. Then Thiago Silva and Rudiger and Kante. Can you spot a pattern?
I can indeed. I like the way that pattern's going.
Yeah, so I mean, in those last five games, you had Koulibaly, Thiago Silva, you had Rudiger, Thiago Silva, Rudiger. So centre-backs have scored five goals in those games. Tottenham, I've missed out as well. Reece James scored as well from a right wing-back position. But just in terms of the centre-back area, last five games, Chelsea have got five goals from centre-backs against Tottenham. So they clearly got something on them, I think, in terms of that set piece. So, I was going to say hopefully one of them two scores. Given I'm a Spurs fan, I'm hoping they don't. But from a betting point of view and from a professional pride point of view, maybe they can get consolation in a famous 5-1 Tottenham win.
Well, at least you'll have something to cheer on if they do score. Let's take a look at the treble for this week, Mark. We've had a decent bit of success with this over the past couple of months.
Yeah, not so good last week, unfortunately, but there you go. Dortmund to beat Hoffenheim. Dortmund, on a strong winning streak at the moment against an Hoffenheim team that can't buy a point now. I suppose you do wonder if these sort of long winning runs and losing runs have got to end sometime, but hopefully won't be this weekend. So going for Borussia Dortmund to win that game. Over 2.5 goals in Leicester against Arsenal. I just think that would be really fun. Wouldn't be surprised if Leicester got something out of the game. Also, wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal scored four goals. It feels like that type of game where, a bit like that one with Man United last week, where, Leicester could have been 2-0 up. They weren't, and they lost the game 3-0. So that's why I prefer the overs to the both teams to score. And there's a big game in Spain at the weekend, Madrid derby. Real Madrid to beat Atletico. I think there's been a long enough time to recover from the events on Tuesday. Real Madrid they're not purring. They rarely purr. But I do think that they've got the players in the final third that can be decisive against an Atletico Madrid team that we saw in their Champions League exit, and not even in Europe this season, not as good as they were. And who is, Jack? I mean, I'm certainly not. But hopefully Real Madrid can beat them.
I can't remember the last episode where you didn't part Real Madrid, and they haven't really let you down too much, have they?
No. The one where they did let us down was when we did it on the Thursday morning, and then they went to extra time on the Thursday night, I think, in the cup, and that then made the game. I think that was against Atletico actually, and then it made the game a bit dodgy for the Sunday, because I never like it if they played extra time on the Thursday. I think that, you know, that does make them sort of more vulnerable, any team more vulnerable. But yeah, as a general rule, the price is holding up because on XG, on sort of shot stats, underlying statistics, they're not actually doing amazingly well. But as I've said time and time again, I don't worry too much about that with Real Madrid.
Here's hoping for a win this weekend. And let's take a look at your strongest bet for this week, Mark.
Yeah, over 2.5 goals, Leicester against Arsenal. Spoken at length, really, about this already in a couple of different sections. What I would say, just in terms of Leicester, 14 goals in their last three games. That's not a fluke when you consider, really, that there were 31 shots on target in those three games. So they're reining them in, but they don't seem capable of stopping the opposition either. And so a lot of space for Arsenal to attack in behind, and a lot of creativity in the home team that can maybe cause the league leaders a few problems. So, yeah, hopefully a game that with plenty of goals.
Really looking forward to it, Mark. Thanks, as always, for your insight ahead of what should be a really cracking few days of football. Big thanks to Dan, as always. Lots of selections have been put up on this week's episode. Please never feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back next Thursday for another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.